All right. How are you?
Good. Terrific.
Good.
What do we have today?
Larry and Barry are on the line here.
Okay.
And Ryan will pick up in 1 second.
Okay.
He was just finishing up a call. If you want to let him... Okay. Let him know.
So what's on your mind, guys?
Barry and Ryan followed up with that client meeting today. That was at 11, and that went very well. Thank you for your help.
Oh, good. Good. What was the what happened?
What happened? I mean, the meeting. I thought the meeting went really well. We talked a lot. You know, just it wasn't real nitty gritty. He was basically, I think, trying to get a feel for us as people, as opposed to, you know, he kind of even said at the end, he's like, you know, most of you guys are gonna have the same tools and stuff. It's about finding the right fit for myself and my my daughter. You know, so we're trying to make. We went in there trying to make more of that human connection and not focusing on the business as much and trying to make sure we were focused on them and the future and, you know, taking care of the family and so forth. So
I think what was interesting, Rob, is that the lawyer focused with him on the fact that he has experience with me and difficult situations, because the guy asked Ryan and I a point blank question, you know, what if my daughter wanted to buy a $5 million vacation home? What would you do? How would you handle it? You know, and I think we responded really well. And I think that, I'm sorry?
What did you say?
They said they'd move in with her.
Yeah. We said we'd move in with her. Ryan came out with a great response, and then I followed it up, and Ryan's response was amazing. He goes, I don't know if I know you well enough or her well enough in the last 45 minutes to give you a sophisticated answer.
Well, we basically don't know. We're not yes men. We're not going to sit here and get steamrolled, and we're going to try to look out for the best interest of his daughter, and also once we get to know them, we'll have a much better idea of how to
handle something like that.
But he didn't even want to reveal to us what he was worth, you know.
Like, we already knew.
I mean, he just kind of said, like, in Boca, if you have $30 million, you're wealthy, and I would be considered a wealthy man. But, you know, I was trying to focus more on the daughter because I think that he's ultimately going to ask her who he wants to work with, who she wants to work with. But the daughter is, what you would call an Instagram influencer. She's basically a stunningly beautiful yoga instructor / clothing model / Instagram hottie who has 300,000 followers and is going to be her own woman. You know, she's not married. When I was sitting in the lobby, I heard her telling her dad she doesn't need to get married and this, that, and another, but... yeah, it's
she's already worth $20 million, $30 million.
Yeah.
He's already transferred that much to her.
Yeah. She's 20.
So did you guys
Good.
Were you able to control yourselves and not throw yourselves at her feet or anything?
Yeah. I mean, I was laying in bed with my wife last night, and, you know, like, ultimately, my wife does enterprise-level sales, and she sells to, you know, people like Dell and Starbucks and Macy's and stuff, and, like, it's a different thing, but, like, for me, she just said, like, look, you're not bringing them anything that everyone else isn't going to bring them. You just have to sell yourselves and that you are who you are and you care about your clients, and we tried to focus a lot about that and how we've actually prevented some, you know, we talked about how Barry got one of a trustee that was abusing the privileges thrown off the account, and, you know, that we look out for our people. We have deep, deep relationships. We brought out the Supernova folder. You would have been smiling and, you know, told them about that process. And, you know, we're local. They could see us as much as they want. We have, each of us only work with about 50 families. And, you know, we built our practice. You know, we told them about you and about, you know, what we've been doing here. And the whole amount didn't come out or anything like that. He just assumed we were at the appropriate level because our guy was, you know, bringing us in. But, you know, we just talked a lot about it. I said, look, anyone who gets an audience with you is going to be qualified. That doesn't need to be said. You know, we have every resource available to us at our firm, but ultimately, you know, we want to work with your family for the next 50 years. I just said it flat out, you know, like, we hope that your daughter loves us and, you know, we're able to make sure that her wishes and your wishes are carried out long in the future, you know, like, and, you know, we tried to talk about some light stuff, you know, we talk about basketball and, you know, the Final Four and all that stuff, and just tried to be normal people and give them warm and fuzzies and let them know we're not scumbags, so that's all we could do. So,
good. That was the key. Yeah. I think your wife hit it. You know, you got to, it's the same, right? When you meet somebody at a cocktail party or you're in for a $200 million account, you spend the first half figuring out what you have in common, why you like each other, and the second half is, why am I different? Why do you think, you know, why are we unique in the market? That's it. It's always the same. And sounds like that's just what you did. So, good.
Yeah.
And that's the best you can do, you know. It's personality after that, and, you know, whether he's got a buddy that's something or, you know, you just...
He had a friend. His friend was Muriel Siebert. She died.
Yeah, I remember. Oh, yeah. And she had he had his money with her, huh?
Yeah, I think it's still there.
Interesting.
Yeah, so if you have any friends there, don't say anything.
No,
or somebody. Yeah, but no, he said he had a personal relationship with Muriel. Today he asked if we know who she was. I was like, yeah, she was the first woman seat holder on the New York Stock Exchange and this, that, and other, and, you know, he talked about that, where the office was. And, you know, we also, I think I caught him off guard a little bit with some of the research we did. Like, I knew who was managing his properties for him and all that stuff, and he was
impressed.
Yeah. Yeah, right. We talked about some of the charity work that he's into, but doesn't seem to be real charitably inclined right now. I was able to rattle off a couple things, but the only story I forgot to bring up was he actually bought some stuff from Imelda Marcos' auction when they liquidated her estate.
Really?
Wanted to talk about that. Yeah.
Probably a good thing we didn't. No, that was okay.
Do you think it was bad to acknowledge that we Googled and did our research on him before going into the meeting?
People are flattered. They want to hear about themselves. They like to talk about themselves. Whether they're worth $200 million or Donald Trump or they're a guy with $50,000.
Oh yeah, I asked him to explain to us about how he got so successful so early on and everything. We heard his up and coming is.
Hell of a story, actually.
No, he got into selling, you know, he got into selling insurance.
Auto insurance.
Before anyone was really into it. Before, they just started buying buildings in New York when they weren't that expensive.
So, probably in the 70s and all, when it was a hit.
Yeah, about then. Yeah. He's a Korean War veteran.
Oh, okay.
Well... what was he in the Korean War, did you ask?
He's in the Army. He didn't seem to want to go too deep into that. The Korean War, from the little I know about, battle was not a fun one for us.
It was a horrible
one. Yeah,
it was really the Marines that got smoked in Korean War. The Army did okay. They fought and they never were out of control. They stayed on the coast, and the Marines are the ones.
Yeah, trying to advance up the hills there was not good.
It was really stupid. once they crossed that parallel and went into the North Korea and started hitting the mountains, that was insane. Just got smoked. The Chinese just brought in millions of Chinese. That's all it was. And they were, you know, they brought them in stealth and just attacked when they were just in their worst position in the middle of the winter. It was a horrible, horrible, horrible experience. And we're lucky to get out of there ever. I mean, just to get the retreat was amazing.
Yeah, if we got Hitler, we should have learned from that. It's like, oh yeah, let's march into Russia in the winter. Yeah, not so much.
Yeah. It was the usual arrogance, you know. We smoked them in World War II, we can smoke them anywhere, you know. But,
yeah.
You know, war is terrible and stupid wars are much worse.
Yeah.
So anyway, but we didn't learn anything, so we just keep repeating ourselves. So what else? So that went well, what else?
We had a 5-star meeting Thursday.
Yeah, we did our first meeting on Thursday. We'll do a meeting this afternoon.
Really good.
Yeah.
How did the 5-star meeting go?
It went well. I think it was a little bit herky-jerky, just figuring out what we needed to accomplish out of this and kind of let everybody talk and kind of give everybody a little bit of a platform. This is what you need to be doing. This is your task, et cetera. I think as we go and do them time and time again, they'll get better.
Yeah, we're up to about 40 financial plans, so we're starting to work our way through that. We got a commitment from Larry that he was going to, we're bringing on a new guy next month. So when that new guy comes on, we got a commitment from Larry that he was going to segment his book a bit further, because Larry's kind of got twice as many clients as Barry and I have right now. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, he'll be doing a deeper evaluation. Larry started with a lot more to start with, but we gotta commit a little bit more on that. And then we made it through the first quarter. Our business was only down 2.5% as a team, considering the market was down 16% last time our fees were billed, and our managed money was down about 10-11% for the quarter. So for us to get through the first quarter only down 2.5%. While simultaneously giving away a bunch of clients was very relieving. Let's just put it that way. We were shocked at how successful that was. So hopefully we're going to get a nice pickup here from we're going to get our new quarterly fees will be based on the end of March value. So after the market recovered nicely, so we should have 3 months of better levels now.
Right.
So we're excited about that and seeing how that works out. That big $70 million account that we met with, we actually lost to a guy in our office. So I just had an uncomfortable conversation with him. Basically said, like, in the future we would be walking down the hall to talk to him if we knew we were pitching against somebody, and we don't want to be in a situation where we're selling against him in the future, you know, like... We have a friendly conversation, but basically it's like, you're not going to walk on us. You can go fuck yourself if you think you are. So that was a little bit frustrating. But that big guy actually ended up living in the building next to our former partner that we had a terrible disillusion with. So I don't know if our former partner played into that or not. Because he actually mentioned it specifically when he called back a second time asking, you know, we met with him for 3 hours and he called back a second time asking a bunch of buying questions and then happened to mention him. So I don't know if our former partner directed him elsewhere or what the scenario was, but, and the guy that won the business is a Barron's top advisor, and he's one of the more prominent advisors in our area. So it's not, you know, we could have just been outclassed as well, but,
nobody can outclass us. What are you talking about?
He's a one man show. He's got one assistant.
You understand what I'm saying. Not outclassed, but just, you know, this guy should have got a recommendation from his golfing buddy or whatever. So.
Right. You just got to get up to bat a lot. That's all.
Right. So we all committed to doing our activity trackers moving forward. We need to do those starting today, guys. Let's make sure we have them done after this meeting.
Those trackers are, in my opinion, are important because it lets us know, quite frankly, how much time we're fooling around or how little time we're actually working on talking to clients or working on the business. And it may be eye-opening for everyone.
What would you call our meeting today, Rob? I mean, we met with the Center of Influence that introduced us clearly, but would that be a... I don't think this is a prospect meeting.
No, I think it would be a Center of Influence meeting.
Right. It's a Center of Influence meeting.
Okay.
You could theoretically also, you know, call it a client meeting as well. Once again, not a big deal either if you mark both of those.
I mean, I think it's really important to... I told a guy today... a neat guy. I've been working with him about as long as I've been working with you guys. And he's a very creative guy. He's got a lot going on, but he's not as organized as he should be. So he's got, you know, a couple of good centers of influence he's developing. He's got a couple of projects. He's got a company he's trying to penetrate. He's trying to do... you know, he's always done ESOP, so he's getting an ESOP project together, and so he's got all these things, right? And but they're not organized. I said, so the way I do it and the way I recommend doing it is build a folder for each project and treat it like a prospect or a client. In fact, treat it like a 1242 client. So at least once a month, it's going to pop up. I said it's going to pop up like a piece of toast out of the toaster, and there it is on your desk. And you're committed to spending 1 hour on that project. So that's where you're calling the company we, you know, just happened to have in mind was a company called CoStar in Washington, D.C. I know the company because I've invested in it for quite a while now. And... it's a gold mine. I mean, it's a great company that's growing like a madman. And I said, so you need to develop a center of influence inside CoStar, and his company does the cash management for them. I said, get together with the institutional FA that's in charge of CoStar and talk to him about working together to build a relationship, get some introductions from him to some people in the Treasury's Department and other places, and start building your network. But it won't happen unless you make it happen. You know, you got to get meetings with him and meetings with CoStar and meetings here. And just build it like you're, you know, as I said to him, do you ever see the movie The Americans or the TV show The Americans on Netflix? It's a great story.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. Right. It's about some, you know, two people that take up housekeeping in Washington, D.C., have a couple of kids, but they turn out to be Russian agents. And they penetrate the local Northrop Grumman or something and steal the stealth, plans for the stealth bomber and all this. But the point I made is that, you know, what they're willing to do to get into an account, to compromise the account, is amazing. And I said, so, you know, why don't you do that? You know, think like you're an American, you're one of the Russian citizens, and you got to get
think like we're spies. Yeah.
Exactly. And do whatever it takes to get in there, other than, you know, you can't murder people and you're not going to blackmail people, but you can do everything.
Sleep with hot women.
Right, yeah. Do everything that's legal and ethical to get in there. But that's my point, is that we, you know, we make a cursory run at something and then we give up. You can't. You know, you got to be a maniac. go a little bit.
You want billion?
He asked me the same question. No, I haven't watched Billions. I've got it on my list.
There's an episode. The episode this week was kind of like that, where this guy needs to get in with this influencer, and this influencer needs to get a carried concealed weapon permit in New York. So he like that's impossible, and like his dad basically says you need to do it specifically because it's impossible. Like his dad's one of those guys where it's like, you know, like his dad was ultra successful, and he wanted to be attorney general and governor and everything, and like so he finally like decides he's going to do it, and then like literally he had to like get tickets for like this children's Passover benefit thing for like this one guy who was able to get an introduction to a guy that could like have this Mexican kid's little league birth certificate changed to make him look like he was 6 months younger, and then like parlayed that to like get in with this guy. But then he had to get ski season tickets like for first run at Deer Valley like before anyone else was allowed on the slopes for this other guy in order to get the tickets for the Jewish thing, and like it was like he like figured out a way to like make it happen, but like he literally had to go like all the way around Mary's Barn just to like get one thing through, but he had like 7 different favors lined up to make it work, and he ended up getting it, you know. No, he got the guy who kept the little league for is like the police commissioner or something. So now the police commissioner is endorsing him for attorney general, or you know, like blah 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 blah. Just you know,
right.
Shows pretty amazing. And for someone in the industry, it's, you know, some of it's a little glorified head on BS, but you know, I'm sure some of it's real.
Well, I mean, that's the game, right? So this guy, it turns out, he just said, oh, yeah, and by the way, I gave this other guy a couple of tickets to the Masters for Thursday and Friday. And I go, what? He goes, yeah. My dad had 4 tickets to the Masters. He used to work down in Augusta and help the treasurer of Augusta National. So he gave him, put him on the list. So he's had 4 tickets that whole lot. I mean, are you kidding me?
This?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty valuable currency.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and he's like, well, I don't want to use it too much. But I said, are you kidding? Come on.
Yeah. I'd make sure it got in the hands of people that could do me favors, or at least, you know.
Of course. You know, you just leverage everything you can in your life. Not because you're manipulative, but just because that's the name of the game, right? The name of the game is leverage. So, giving to give, but also leverage. You want to leverage everything you can.
Chapter 9. I'm on Giving to Give right now.
Right. There you go. Good. Thank you for writing up the review. I appreciate it very much.
I was kind of torn, you know. Like, I don't want other people to do this, but I was trying to be nice to you. I think I said that in my review, didn't I? I think I said, I truly hope nobody reads this, you know, because I don't want to deal with other people. Yeah.
You did. It was hysterical. It was the funniest one of all, by far.
I see you on LinkedIn, and I noticed it appears you work with a pretty prominent UBS team in our marketplace. How many teams do you work with in South Florida currently? Not that that's an exact number. I mean, 10 or 8 or 20?
Well, it just depends on what time, you know, how many people have gone through my little fingers, you know.
Right.
But it doesn't matter, honestly. I've always said, I put every single idea I had in my head into that book. Everything that came out of the workbook, every idea I've ever had went into the Supernova Multiplier. And the reason I did it was because, one, I wanted you guys to have the ideas, and you could read it over and over and listen and listen and listen, and then you'd get it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to, you know, go to eternity holding ideas inside me. That's stupid. And third, I knew nobody would read it and use it. So I figured, what the hell? Give them everything. You know, one of my competition wants to read that book and copy everything I do. Good for them. You know, it's flattering.
Right.
That's the way you got to feel that way. Because in reality, guys, look how long it took you to have your first five-star meeting.
Mm.
And you got me on your ass for a year or more, right? Telling you to do it, and it still takes this long. Now imagine somebody reading a book. How much are they really going to use it? Not much, okay? So change is really hard, and change that actually helps you is even harder, right? Look at obesity in the country. I mean, it's really hard to do the right things.
Hey, guys, would you mind if I brought up the board membership stuff? Did you, one of you have a topic you really want to bring up? I think that's something that we're all kind of struggling with a little bit.
The board membership?
Well, I know you've joined the JCC board, but, like, you know, in terms of where we want to play, like, I took interest in two different charities. And at first glance, it seems like one charity is kind of getting off the ground, doesn't really have its shit together, for lack of better words. They don't really have a website. They got a Facebook page. There's some influential players involved, but they're kind of the only chapter in the country right now. This is the American Association for Youth Caregivers, like for children who are taking care of parents and grandparents. So on one side, it would be interesting maybe to be able to get in on the ground level, but on the other side, I'm not really tapping into an established thing that I could spend, you know, some time on this and doesn't really get off the ground, or, you know, I may be pulling a lot more weight than I want to right away, which, once again, could be a good thing. And then the other one was Honor Flight, where it's got, they fly up the veterans to Washington, D.C. They kind of have a one last hurrah, and a lot of the...
We talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah, they have a very established national network of groups, and, you know, but the people in the room, it's a lot of retired military, and there was a lot of, you know, 16, 17 year olds in the room, so that may be a very good place to go. I don't know if they're going to be the high net worth that I want, but there's probably a few somewhere, or, you know, people can make introductions or something. I don't know. From your standpoint, like when I read the section on the board membership and how you interviewed that one woman who was kind of naturally doing that progression where she would join a committee for 2 years and sit as treasurer or vice president for a little while and then naturally get elected to president and then kind of move on to another board, she sounded like she was already rich. I think like she was the child of, you know, some big prominent business person. I can't remember who it was, maybe a regional manager for Merrill or something. But, like, for us, Larry's involved at the JCC, and he helps chair this golf tournament, and it's a good thing for him to be able to say to a lot of people down here since we're a very Jewish marketplace. But at the same time, you know, Larry's not overly involved in the Jewish culture down here either. And I think it would be good to have some other... We all need that too. This is what we're trying to figure out. So
you should have two, and your spouse you should have two.
Okay.
Your spouses can be amazingly effective at this. More effective than you got.
Yeah.
And I say that because they do it for all the right reasons. I mean, if they're not any good at it, don't do it. But if they're...
Yeah, my wife could crush at this. Like, she quit her job. She can come work for us and make us a lot of money.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I will tell you, I'm okay at this. I'm too antsy. I'm too ADD. I'm okay. My wife is fabulous at it. She's just all sincere and does the right thing and makes friends with everybody, and everybody loves her, and they want her to be on all these boards. And she says no and gets off the boards and then goes back on two new ones a year later or 2 years later. So she's really good, and she has the ability, especially when she always carried my cards with her, And people would approach her and say, my husband needs help, but he won't talk to your husband. And Marcia would just give him my card. She carried my card, gave her my card, and said, have your husband call him. He'd be happy to talk to him. And that's how I got business as an FA, and then that's how I got business as a manager for my FA.
And if they didn't meet the minimum, she would just pass it on to somebody else, but you'd kind of shepherd that process?
Okay. Of course. You know, as a manager, I'd make the appropriate contact, you know, for the size and all that.
Or if people get sat as butlers, you don't want to hand off people on the board if you're
trying
to.
Right. Yeah. But you want to be, you know, you always want to listen and hear their story and then do the right appropriate handoff.
But I guess the bigger question was, should I seek out an established charity or board, or do you think I should take a risk on joining a less established one to kind of be a trailblazer, you know, a little bit, or maybe have a bigger impact? You know, like if I walk into the art museum, you know, there's going to be 9 advisors and, you know, like all that stuff. And I mean, clearly it has to be something I care about. I understand that, but
I think you're answering your own question to some degree. Okay. I think you've got to do something that you're interested in. You don't want to waste your time. You know, when I wrote the chapter, I talked about interviewing. First, you start by asking your clients what they would recommend. So, remember, a lot of times the best thing to do is to go back to the advice model, which is what you're doing with me, to SMRT.
Mm.
The advice model starts by asking your clients that, you know, I have a little more time. I'm interested in giving back to the community. I know you're involved in the community. What would you recommend that I, what organizations would you recommend that I think about helping? And they go, oh, I'm involved in this, and I'm involved in this, and I'm involved in this. Well, knowing my age and the time I have to give to it, what do you think would be a good fit for me? Then they tell you, and then you say, could you arrange for a meeting with the director and yourself, have lunch or something, and then talk about it. I'd like to interview them.
Does this sound horrible? A lot of our clients are not charitably inclined. Like, that's how I found the American Association of Youth Caregivers. And I think, like, Barry, I know Sue and Ellis are real involved with the PAP Corps for cancer research. But I don't feel like a lot of our clients are involved like that. So maybe it's because we're not working with the big people yet, you know.
You don't have to ask just, you know, it's like enthusiastically endorsed lists. You know, you don't just have to ask clients who can they enthusiastically endorse their CPA. You can ask anybody.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, I mean, you can go to a cocktail party and say, hey, you know, I'm thinking at this stage of my career, we've been successful. I'm thinking about spending a little more time giving back to the community. What organizations would you suggest I consider? I mean, it's a great conversation. They tell you all about what they're doing, and that's what wealthy people talk about.
I think something that I struggle with your book and stuff, is that there's so many good lines for delivery. Like, instead of just asking a client, well, what charities are you interested in? When you use the line, at this stage of my career, now that I've experienced success and have more time and I'm more comfortable, like, that sounds so much better. You know, like, I've never been one for scripting and stuff, but, like, there's certain lines that when you deliver them, or when you have them memorized, wrote a lot of them, but, like, you know, that's the hardest thing for me. Like, is when I'm trying to, like, highlight stuff in the book and whatever. Like, I'm going through the book. I'm going to be rereading the book a second time with a highlighter, you know, when I go through it. I'm trying to get through one time just to absorb it and then kind of highlight it. Otherwise, I feel like when I'm highlighting the whole time, I'm not really, you know, getting the message. But, like, some of these lines, it's just, like, that's one of the things that I struggle with is, like, I read it, it sounds so good. And then I'm in a meeting, I'm like, me, Charity, you, tell me, Charity. like all of a sudden I'm like Squanto or something. And I was like,
I write them down, Ryan. I have them posted on my computer.
Oh, you do?
Okay. Yeah. That's why we're different. What did you value most from our time meeting today? You know, volatility is disagreement, disagreement on price. Tax loss, it's a coupon that we use for, you know, to offset the IRS. Just little things, I write them down so that I keep them there. It works for me, so.
It's really important. I've got them all over my computer. Words are your tools. So it's like, oh, I'm going to get this, very expensive Swiss carving knife, you know, and it costs $2,000, but it's the best in the world. If you're a chef, you might buy it, right? The key is that, you know, if I can give you a set of words that you can use, it's like that Swiss carving knife, you know, it's invaluable in the right hands. Worthless in the wrong, but incredibly valuable in the right hand. So that's why I give you the word, and that's why I write the book. And the other thing, that's why we record these calls, so that you can go back and listen to them. So you can't listen to my book yet, but you can go back and listen to every call we've ever had and just play it on your earbuds and say, hey, you know, when you're taking a walk, hear what we talked about. And you can also say, hey, Rob, I've got this case or this situation. How would you suggest we, just like you did the other day, you know?
That's a good segue, because Barry's got something he wants to ask you about.
All right, go ahead.
Hey, you ready for this one, Rob?
I'm always ready.
Oh, no, this is a good one. So my dad and his wife and their daughter, who I really don't have I don't have any relationship with them, but all three of them were arrested.
Well, haven't heard what they do, Barry.
You know what patient brokering is?
They run rehab centers.
Yeah.
They were getting kickbacks from the urine test place. Apparently, the urine test place booked $140 million worth of urine tests over a couple-year period. And they decided they were going to share that with some of their biggest referral sources.
The long and short of it is, I'm trying to figure out if somebody said something to me how to deal with this. I mean, I already reported it to compliance just as a cautionary thing. Just kind of looking for some advice, I guess, on how to handle somebody.
Give me again the relationship. This is your dad?
Yeah.
Your estranged dad.
My estranged dad. I mean, Larry and Ryan know firsthand that my relationship with him has been very distant for a very long time. He's not a well person, but this is his fourth or fifth wife. She's from Russia. She's substantially younger. She came into business with him a long time ago when they first got married, took over the business. They got in trouble for this patient brokering. All three of them were arrested. There was a big, if you Google it, it's a easy Google.
I don't think most people will put it together, but if they do, what do you think?
How do I handle it?
What you say is this, every family has the family problem. Some of them have more than one family problem, but every family has the family problem. And if you don't think that every family has the family problem, then you might be it. And that's all I said.
Okay.
It's none of their business.
Yeah.
Okay? It's none of their business. like your brother gets picked up on drugs, you know, put in jail, and the key is, you know, what are you going to do to help them to get out and make their life better? You know, in this case, if it was a brother or a son or a cousin or something, maybe you could do something about it. When it's a parent, it's a lot harder because there's no time to fix anything. They're just wrecked.
I don't even want to be involved.
Right. So it's just a sad case, you know. It's a sad story. Yeah. And, you know, people make poor choices, and then, but if they've been making them their whole life, then you're not going to fix that. So, but I will tell you, you'll never hear a word about it. And if you do, the person shouldn't, you know, it's that just would be, in you know, not a nice thing to do, to bring it up. Okay. I think it won't come up. I'm telling you. Unless they put your picture on the paper next to his or something, which they're not going to do. So
his picture looks pretty bad.
And,
they won't even think of you in this. It's completely different.
It's hard. The way that the press things are, it's hard. I guess you'd have to look at it, Rob, to see. It's not.
Rob, in terms of supernovaing our implementation process,
yep.
Do you find I should have kind of a streamlined selection set of opportunities that we're all kind of utilizing just in different percentages, like we cook with the same dozen ingredients just in different amounts?
Here's what I would do. Supernovaing your process, your investment process, could be as disciplined as your client service process. You shouldn't have, you know, three sets of service that you give. You shouldn't have, you know, A service and B and C and D. You should have supernova service. That means the best service for everything.
Mm-hmm.
You should have an investment process that's 100% the same. Now, you're not going to get there right away, right? But your intention is to have it bulletproof, meaning every client gets a plan, every client gets the full implementation of the plan, every client gets you guys to monitor not only his asset management, but his liability management. Managing his debt should be a process. Managing their assets should be a process. And it should depend on their situation, slightly modified by their risk tolerance. And the reason I say slightly modified by their risk tolerance, what I'm saying is if somebody needed to have a bypass and they were very risk adverse, the doctor wouldn't say, oh, you're risk adverse, so we're not going to give you the bypass.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
What you do, you get people to do what they should do, not what their brain, their risk aversion tells them to do. Now, you may have a few more bonds than stocks for a person that's very risk adverse, but you're not going to keep them in cash. Okay, so you shouldn't have 15 different asset allocation models and 15, you know, 300 different investments. You should have a matrix that you decided through incredible work and constant monitoring is the perfect model for asset allocation today. Now, tomorrow you might have somebody argue with you that it should be changed, but for as of today, this is the model the team is using.
Shouldn't have a conservative, a moderate, and an aggressive one. You're saying we should just have whatever the best, whatever the optimal one is at the current time, and try to convince everyone to get on board with optimal. So if we have a conservative client, try to get them into aggressive if it's a good time to be aggressive.
you should be getting, you should have modifications to your core model. Okay? So if somebody is 85 years old and very conservative, you're still going to have the model. They're just going to have some of the asset allocations different for them. But the investment process should be the same.
Okay. So same ingredients, different ratios.
Right. And that way you guys can be held to these, you know, this is how we do for people. Not, well, you know, we have 15 different models, and if you're lucky enough to get our good one, then you did well last year.
Only three. We only have three models, basically.
But yeah, no, I know that stupid conversation where it's like, Kilo, how did you do for your clients? I'm like, shit. I'm like, well, some people had shitty years last year, and I know I got a guy that's like annualizing at 25% in the last 5 years. You know, it's like, you know, how do we even answer that? You know,
right? All right. So in the meeting on Monday, everybody should be talking about their pipeline, right? Who's in their pipeline, how soon they'll be to close, what's your mastermind look like, what is your centers of influence meetings look like, you know, how many people in your pipeline, how many people do you think you need to be in your pipeline based on your closure rate?
Okay.
Okay. What's our goal? Each individual goal for the year is to bring in assets, and what's our cumulative goal, and how are we doing versus that goal? It's a marketing meeting. It's all about marketing, the pipeline meeting. Now, remember, the key is activity. So you'll be wanting to monitor activity. How did you do an activity last month or last week, excuse me? That's what you're really after in that meeting. How many people do you think you need to see a week to reach your goal? I saw four people. I need to see eight. Okay? It's up to you, guys. You know, what are your goals? How big are your goals? How much activity you need? You need to know those things. And what you do is over time, you practice and see what it's going to take to close the business that you need. You adjust your activity, you don't change your goals.
Okay.
And you get better at it. Ryan, once you learn the words, you don't have to learn them again. Okay, I don't need to learn any of these words over again. They're all in my head. They're all there. Okay? So I don't need to study, but when I'm learning them, I need to study. So don't think because you're having to study, it's going to be like that forever.
Right.
You got to keep honing your skill and practicing, but once you get the skills, you're going to be great at what you do. And then you won't lose the $70 million kit.
Yeah.
It's the words. It's the words that are most appealing to the ear of the client. You want to get those words. You want to practice them.
Okay. Do you feel this is a more productive call?
Do I think it's more productive?
No, I said this call, last time we did a call, it was, you said it was the stuff we should be going over more amongst ourselves. I just want to make sure you felt this was a better.
This is a good call. I'm very happy. You guys are meeting. You're doing the things you said you're going to do. You're at your Thursday meeting. You're having your Monday meeting. You're going to get better. But you've got to work. You've got to work. No other way. It takes work. You can be smart and you can learn, but you got to work. Can't say, you know, well, we didn't do anything last month, you know, last week. We didn't do anything. That's a waste of everybody's time. You don't need me for that. You need me for these case studies. You need me to tell you what words to use. So you're using me effectively today. So just do that. Get enough meetings with prospects so that we have a good conversation.
So last question for me, at least, and it's a quick, maybe two-parter, but there's two types of clients right now that are most frustrating for us. It's the clients that you're either not responsive or the clients that, like, just feel like they know everything and they want to make all of their investment decisions, and for the life of me, I can't figure out why they keep their accounts at Morgan Stanley. Like, I don't even understand something.
Who's the second?
Like, Peter Smith.
Okay.
So we have this guy, Peter Smith. He's a retired attorney. He's got like $2.5 million with us. We've done like enough to buy like McDonald's dinner of revenue off of him. Because he does like a few trades a year, and like, you know, we really don't even get much commission from it. And then I've got like a client right now who's got like $1 million with us that's mostly managed, and she kind of lets me do whatever I want to do, but she's got $2 million outside. And
mm-hmm.
I've met with her twice in like the last 8 months where she's literally said to me, like, I'm going to get you another $1 million or $1.5 million. I just need to go to the bank tomorrow. And like, tomorrow never comes. And like, with her, it's like I send emails off into space and I call her and can't reach her. And then like, it's all the communications like on her terms. It drives me nuts. You know, and I actually have her brother. He's like the same way, where it's like,
all right,
between
it's
the two of them.
$1 million. All right, forget about the money. Are you doing 12-4-2 with either of these?
No.
Okay. Are you doing financial
planning? I can't get them to honor the 12-4-2.
All right. Are you doing financial planning for them?
I did an original financial plan for the one years back, and that plan needs to be revisited, and I did one recently for the other guy, and I have to do the follow-up now that I have the plan complete.
That's amazing. I would have bet you big money that you hadn't done a plan on either one of them.
No.
They let you do a plan, but they don't listen to you.
Yeah, and then if you ask them, like, they love me, or, you know, like, I'm great and all this stuff, and they totally trust me, and when I'm sitting at their house, it's like they're a totally different person. And once I leave their front door, it's like, did you think I was like a telemarketer or something? Like,
I think maybe you got to tell them that the minimum, that our minimum is being raised to $2 million.
I am? Why?
Yeah, it's not a bullshit game. Like, they both trust me, and I'm gonna have all the money, and they're also gonna make more money in the future. Like, they sold their business, and they're gonna come up with another business. They've already told me in confidence, like, the different projects they've got working on, and like, I want to be like these people's best friend. It's like they won't let me, and it's driving me nuts.
Well, don't let it drive you crazy. There's some people that you're just not gonna be able to. You do the 12-4-2, and you call, and they're not there. You leave a nice message and say, talk to you next month.
All right, so do the 12-4-2 without their schedule, just kind of start calling them?
Yeah. Is it convenient for us?
I would do the whole thing. I'd send them an agenda with a date and everything and just treat them as if they agreed to the date. And then call, and when they're not there, you just leave a nice message and just operate like they agreed to everything.
Okay.
Okay, they don't sound like as big a problem as you made them out to be, because it, in my mind, they did a financial plan, so that clearly they're listening to you. I would tell you that these people would be on probation in my mind.
Yeah.
Okay, or on paper, and they would be out when somebody big came in. Unless you can, you know, these are the people that I call fill or kill. At some point, you need to do a fill or kill meeting with them. Which is, hey, this is how we work. We love you. You want in? This is really, we're really excited. This is a great program. No, I don't want in. Good. I've got a person for you. You're reassigned. Okay? At this point, you're not in that position to do that, but that would be what I would be planning on if you can't bring them around.
Okay.
So yeah. Irrational behavior is not something you can deal with long term. So you've got to, you know, it's like an FA that won't listen to me as a manager, right? They won't do anything I suggest. They, you know, I'm not going to fire them, but they're sure not going to get much of my time. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the 80-20 rule, you know, for me as a manager. I've got to have people that like me and trust me and want to work with me. And that's the same for you. So at some point, they're going to find a new home. And you're going to be the guy that's going to help them do that. Unless they come around, you know. That's why I say do the 12-4-2 and maybe that'll bring them around. If it doesn't, then, you know, maybe treat them like a butler and just store them away until you find a new client.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, that's why we do segmentation. I mean, if you're doing 5 million, I'd say, what are you talking about? Get rid of them.
Couple of years.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what, you know, you get it. I mean, we've got one standard of service. We're going to give it. We're proud of it. You should be proud of it. You know, I like you, you like me, I trust you, you trust me, I listen to you, you listen to me. If you can't fit in that game, then we'll find you somebody that maybe you'll listen to.
Are we running over to your next call?
Yeah. Everybody needs a coach. So, you know, you said they need a coach or they won't listen to you, find them a coach they'll listen to. Anyway, good questions today, guys. Thanks. Thanks for doing your homework. I appreciate it. Makes it more fun.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Come back. Bye.